Hi, and welcome to the Let Love In Live Summit, where I have gathered some of the top experts who are going to share you their best tools on how to spark it, maintain it, and reignite it. And today, I'm really excited. I've got some returning guests. I've got Emily and Scott McKay. Welcome.
Well, welcome to you. We're happy to be here. As a matter of fact, I got some kerosene in the garage if you really want to spark it and relight it.
Now,
for trouble, so...
Well, we'll start with an interview. How's that?
Okay.
All right. Now, Scott and Emily are going to be speaking to us about getting over heartbreak to let love in. Now, before we get started, I want to tell you a little bit about them. Scott and Emily McKay are professional dating and relationship coaches, authors, adventure travelers, conference speakers, media personalities, and podcast hosts. Together, they founded X and Y Communications in San Antonio, Texas, which focus on equipping and empowering men and women to find love, live exciting lives, and to go from good to great in their relationships. Scott is a four-time Amazon number one best-selling author and the host of the top 10 ranked podcasts on iTunes, The Mountaintop, that can be found at www.mountaintoppodcast.com. They're both Travelers Century Club members, having traveled to well over 100 countries together and proudly world schooling their two children. Scott and Emily's main web portal is deservewhatyouwant.com, where you can subscribe to their popular newsletter and podcasts all for free. All right, so let's jump into this. Why did you pick that title, Getting Over Heartbreak to Let Love In?
Well, you know, for both of us, we're survivors of first marriage that didn't go according to how we originally envisioned it. That marriage, by the way, was not to each other. We both have exes, so we're on our second marriage, and, you know, the heartbreak that goes with that breakup, at least for my part, I'll let her speak for herself, was that I never planned on getting divorced. I didn't. You know, for me, marriage was living happily ever after. And I felt like there were some situations that were beyond my control that contributed to that breakup happening. And everybody told me after it happened, oh, you know, Scott, you couldn't have been a better husband. You couldn't have been a better father. You know, this just really sucks for you. And of course, that made me feel like a victim, because I mean, there's nothing like, you know, doing your best and still getting kicked to the curb. So I didn't like that feeling. And I think the heartbreak most for me wasn't only in the loss of the relationship itself and having my older daughter not living with me anymore. But it was just in that futility as a man where, you know, I did everything I could and it didn't work. And that's really a hollow feeling, I think.
For me, it was bursting my dreams. You know, you get married the first time and you have this vision of how life is going to be, and it didn't work out. I had to mourn, you know, the death of my fantasies and wonder if such a thing was even out there. Does it even exist? And so I had to build up my faith that a true loving relationship really does exist out there. So yeah, I had to tear down my past to build up my future.
Yeah, so you're talking about two really critical things here, both the mourning and then the having faith that there is great love out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you experience that kind of loss, it's easy to grant that ex-spouse superpowers over you. Like, this is the way it's going to be for everybody else, because that's the way it was with this person, and this person, you know, kind of taught me to believe that it's my fault. And so, you know, I am feckless and hapless, you know, and can't get on with having a good relationship. But, you know, deep down inside, I knew that didn't ring true, that I really wanted to treat a great woman right. I wanted to be a good husband and a good father. And, you know, it seemed to me like I had the skills and the wherewithal to be able to do that. So what happened here that was wrong? So, you know, all of that kind of mental processing and everything, I really do think was part of it, for sure. Yeah.
And, you know, in today's society, people are so negative, it's easy to gravitate towards that and get sucked into this black hole. Right. And unfortunately, that leaves people single for years on end and sometimes never finding that love. And mm-hmm. so it was important for me to make sure I didn't get stuck there.
Yeah, because that heartbreak over time can either be healed and, you know, you can, the fresh wound heals up and you can kind of move on, or it can morph into bitterness and flat out hate if you let it go in the opposite direction. And we meet so many people who have let themselves become bitter and hateful even towards everybody of the other gender because of what happened in one relationship, or even sometimes in one situation. Even like, say I ask a girl out back in high school and she really just dug into one of my limiting beliefs and made me feel terrible. And that, you know, has precluded me from ever talking to any other women again. Well, like I said, that's granting someone superpowers over you that they haven't earned or deserved, because, you know, your entire worldview has been shaped by the opinion of one person who didn't really care about you or want you anyway. And unfortunately, that seems to happen so much. And nowadays, people just aren't resilient in the way they should be in terms of, you know, saying, hey, look, you know what? This is my decision. This is how I'm going to approach relationships in the future. And not necessarily from a selfish perspective, but from a surviving perspective, from an optimistic perspective. Because, of course, you know, being in a relationship, you want to be a giver and you want to be optimistic towards what the other person has to offer. And when you have two people who give in a relationship, you know, the sum total is wonderful. You know, 1 + 1 = 5 or 10 is what I've been saying lately on interviews. But, you know, I think a lot of times those same people who are optimistic and generous and believe in a relationship are also the prime targets of people who are just manipulative and somewhat evil. And it's really a shame that it can go both ways. So, you know, if you're the survivor of one of those latter kind of relationships, you have to kind of find it within to believe, hey, you know what, if I found someone who was more like me instead of trying to take advantage of me, then maybe, you know, in fact, definitely things would go better the second time around. And that's been our truth.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I was going to say, you may have answered the question, but for people that are watching this that are either newly out of a relationship or they're out for a while and they still have that heartache, what's the first step to moving forward from that place and not letting it
turn? You know the answer to that.
The first step is you got to let the past go. You got to forgive any of your own mistakes that's happened in that relationship. You got to forgive the other person for their mistakes. And when I mean forgive, I mean some people were just atrocious, but I don't mean forgive in the sense of, okay, I forgive you, I can take you back. I mean, more specifically, you got forgiveness, I mean, is to let it go. It will do you no good to hold on to that baggage. That's the first step.
Stop letting it eat you from the inside. Stop letting it damage you further. Like, you know, if something's hurting you, stop letting it do damage. You know.
And if you know the difference of how you know you've gotten there, what is your conversation about? When you're with your friends, what are you consumed with? What are your friends tired of hearing you talk about? So if you're always finding yourself talking about your ex and you just can't stop yourself, you haven't let go yet. The next step is to, you know, like I said, forgive yourself, because we all make mistakes. Learn from them and accept the fact that not everybody in this world are bad people. I know a lot of women who've been in relationships mm-hmm. where the husband cheated on them.
Yeah.
And so they have this concept of all men are cheaters. I can't trust any of them.
Right, exactly.
And so you have to start from the bottom and believe not everybody are bad people. You have good men and you have good women, and you have bad men and you have bad women. And we have to make better decisions so that we're not with a bad man or a bad woman the next time around.
Well, I personally think the whole gender war thing's a cop-out. I mean, you know, it's not like any of us have never had another guy do something bad to us or something cruddy to us. But because we're men, we don't sit up and say, oh my God, all men are terrible, including me. You know, there are guys who've been physically or sexually assaulted by other men, and we don't bounce back from that and go, oh my God, all men are terrible, because, you know, it was done unto us by someone of our same gender. So, you know, those same people, sometimes what happens is a woman comes along, does them wrong, and then they decide, oh, I'm a man going my own way from now on. I'm an MGTOW. I'm going to join the manosphere and all women are the problem, you know, and there are plenty of people out there who are so-called dating experts who will write books telling you that, you know, their own gender is your problem. I mean, there's men writing to women you know, assuring them that men are the problem. And there's women writing to men saying, oh, you know, you poor dear. Yes, we women are bitches and sluts. And, you know, let me just reassure you that we're all terrible. And they're the ones selling all the books. But see, that's not what works. It's not what gets somebody into another relationship. One of the things you always say to answer Iris's question that I'm surprised you left on the table was the whole idea of, you know, what do? You get back out there. You don't just sit at home, you know, being angry and watching television shows and looking up internet sites that support your bitterness and anger. I mean, there's communities for people who want to, excuse me, continue to be angry. I mean, they're going to find exactly what they're looking for. I mean, people email me going, don't you understand that all women are terrible and that they're going to ruin your life? And I'm like, well, no, actually, I don't understand that because I'm in a great relationship with a great woman. Don't you understand that not all women are terrible? But they're not going to be talked out of it.
No, instead they say, well, just give it some time.
Give it some time, yeah. You know. You know, back when we used to, back when we first started, we actually started being dating coaches together before we were even married. And I used to get the schadenfreude emails like, oh, yeah, give me 2 years or 3 years and she'll cuckold you and take you all your money and you'll be divorced. Yeah, well, those stopped coming about 5 years ago, in all fairness. People went, all right, well, those two. Now it's just you're an exception. You're lucky. You know, are biologically blessed. You're something that's keeping her around. You know, you're rich. I'm none of those things. I understand the dynamics of relationships and I chose a good woman. And together, we both are optimistic and generous and we get each other almost telepathically, as you probably can already see from this interview. And yeah, but Emily, you always talk about the idea of just don't wallow in this pain. Don't get some kind of twisted joy from being validated with everything you think is terrible and all your negativity. Get out there, meet some people expecting the best. You don't have to jump into another relationship, but my gosh, get on match.com, get on Coffee Meets Bagel and meet somebody and go have coffee with them and just get out there and meet someone.
Be social. Yes. You know, all too often people go, well, I just got divorced. I really need time to myself. I'm going to take a break. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't help anything. Mm-hmm. With the taking the break, all it does is keep you from getting good at something. You know, if you want to learn how to ride a bike and you're having trouble with it, I'm just going to take a break. I'll come back to it when I've mastered it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, our two little ones are both BMX racers at age 4 and 8, and they can't take time off. They're not going to be faster on the BMX track when they don't race for a while. Same goes true here. I mean, to me, as much as you want to believe you're going to visualize something and have it be positive and, you know, Michael Jordan making free throws and look in the mirror and say, I'm good enough and smart enough. You know, nothing succeeds like success. And what really happens is when people sit around and they're ruminating on nothing but the previous experience that's come along, which was negative, it's going to go in the toilet really quickly. It's not going to get better. This whole, you know, it's one of those bits of dating advice. I don't know where it's come from, but it's been perpetuated by God knows who. This whole, you know, wait a year after divorce before you start dating again. Waiting for what? What is going to happen in exactly 365 days that's going to get me where I want to be? Nothing. I mean, life's too short for that. Again, you don't have to get into a rebound relationship. You absolutely positively don't have to start having sex with everybody just to spite your ex. But
you don't have to marry the first person you meet.
Well, that goes without saying. I know people who do. I mean, I've had people who hire me for coaching that was the problem. And it's because the reason they didn't finish it because they didn't want to face me because they went and met someone who was very calipigeonly shaped and then went to Vegas and eloped with them and they said, oh man, Scott's not going to agree with that one. And they never talked to me again. Then they come to me, you know, 3 months later when their life has been ruined and she took half of what was left from the half of what the other one took. And then they go, yeah, I think I need to finish this program. You know, here's sort of what happened. Yeah. You can't do that either. You can't let yourself have a knee jerk reaction, but you can't let yourself just hide in a cave for a year either.
All right. And that's a great segue. So, you know, people that have been married once and they're coming out of it and they have heartbreak, or it could be just a long-term relationship where there's hearts broken and everyone's had heartbreak, even from the time you didn't get picked to go to the prom or any of that, or the cute guy or the cute girl picked somebody else. We've all had heartbreak. So we move forward. We forgive the person, not because we agreed that what they did was right, but because we're releasing the impact it has on us. Get ourselves out there, start dating again. Now, you know, I'm talking for what I imagine some of the viewers are thinking. How can I avoid choosing the same kind of man or doing what this guy did, pick a woman that, you know, took half of his money again? Mm. Like, there's a whole fear of, well, I didn't do it right the first time. What makes me think I can do it right the second time?
Well, I hear a lot of people tell me, I can't help who I fall in love with.
That's one of your soapboxes.
It's one of, exactly. And the reason why is because you can help who you fall in love with. And I'll explain. First of all, you know, you can't lead your life strictly by your heart. You know, we've been given a brain to use and think with, and you have to use that first. And this is how you do that. You meet people, interact, and see if you get along. You don't meet with the purpose of, I got to make this person my spouse. Because then you end up wanting to fall in love with them, making yourself fall in love with them, without realizing this person might be poisonous.
Oh, and the ironic part there is you're chasing the other person away anyway. They're going to go, ooh, this is awful fast we're moving here, lady.
So I always tell women, you have to meet people with the purpose of, do we get along? Is this someone who even has marriage potential? I mean, is he even worth it? Or is she even worth it? And then you have to have a list. You got to write this down. You have to have your deal breakers. If the man hits a deal breaker, you have to be committed to yourself to break it off.
Because you're only being honest with yourself at that point. There's no one else to blame. I mean, you wrote this thing down as a deal breaker with that 2024 site. And so this person comes along and, oh my gosh, this person's wonderful, except they've got a $30,000 a month gambling addiction. Well, I'll help them cure that. Because after all, this person is my soulmate. Yeah, no, you're not. Yeah, this person is great, except they got a deep-seated bitterness towards everybody of my gender. Well, you're not going to heal them from that. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, the funny thing about what you're saying, and it's funny not in the humorous sense, but is that, you know, people really want love to happen. And then they have this person they meet and they project on them what they want this person to be like. And then all the things start coming up where this person isn't really like that. And it isn't really the person they've allegedly fallen in love with, but they just kind of like are the little kid who covers their ears and goes, la, 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 I don't want to hear it. We know people who are married who they can't stand each other. They just flat out don't like each other. We've had couples we try to meet and they come over for dinner and they don't ever come over again. And it's because, weirdly, because we really like each other and it just drives them nuts. You know?
That's really weird. Like, how is that possible?
Oh, we know it's very possible. It's called settling. You know, when you don't have a whole lot of options of people to go out with and someone comes along who's ostensibly better than everyone you've ever dated, someone who's maybe even someone, and this is where it gets really weird, but you know, you trigger this, Iris. You know, you said that person who that cute girl back in high school who didn't ask you out, or you know, or you know, who didn't agree to go out with you, the one who didn't go to the prom with you, the one who you had like this thing for, this torch for, it never got realized. Some people actually meet someone who reminds them either physically or personality wise of that person. And man, that's like a really unfair projection because that person is a completely different person. They don't even know who it is you're projecting upon them. And I've known situations where people have ended up with someone. Well, I think everybody can relate to at least the concept of, okay, this guy or this woman divorces someone and they end up with someone who looks just like their ex-spouse. You know, that's kind of like a well shopworn meme in the relationship world, how that tends to happen. And, you know, sometimes what goes on there is it's you're finding a replacement. You're trying to just backfill what this problem was. You know, you're treating it like, you know, almost like a tech issue that needs to be resolved. And, you know, depending on the personality type, it can be an overly emotional thing or it can be an overly logical thing. But really, in order to let love in, you've really got to consider each new person you meet as an individual. Sure, you can have your types. But yeah, you have to be true to yourself and the deal breakers and then just see who these people are and what is it that they're bringing to the table. And I think the most important things are, you know, is this person optimistic? Are they generous? You know, people who are selfish, narcissistic takers are not ready to be happy in a relationship. They're not going to make you happy. you're just not going to be a good situation. You're very one-sided. People who are people who are pessimistic, you know, if they don't believe that something good could happen, then they're not going to believe you have their best interests at heart. They're going to start blaming you for coming home 40 minutes later than you should. You know, where's the other woman? You know, that optimism that she and I have towards each other, really keeps us from thinking bad things. It keeps us from gravitating bad thoughts. And, you know, the generosity that we give to each other, like I said, you know, if you're really selfish, all you're ever going to get from someone is what you demand of them. But, you know, if you're generous and you have someone who's generous in return, you'll get all these surprises that you never even expected or asked for, and life's that much richer. But the most important thing, and we both agree on this, is that, you know, we kind of get each other. We're on the same team. We're two of a kind. It's not, you know, guys will write me and they'll go, all right, well, you know, my girlfriend of 2 years said this. What does she really mean? I'm like, did you ask her? And they're like, zounds, what a great idea. You know, it's like, this is obvious to me. It's like, you know, Emily and I, we can get cranky with each other. We can stomp through the kitchen, go, oh my God, what are you thinking? It's like, well, this. It's like, well, yeah, that's what I thought. You know, we already know what the other one's thinking. And what that does is that takes the whole concepts, again, shopworn relationship advice, communication, trust, these cornerstones of relationship never come up when you get each other. When you just, you know what's going on with this other person. You just kind of, they're like, she's like the female version of me in here. You know, when you meet someone you have that deep connection with, and the whole things like communication and trust and stuff like that, they kind of fall into place. And I don't want to sound Pollyanna-ish about it, because of course we have to be trustworthy and we do have to communicate with each other. But it's not something you worry about or you guess about or you're walking on eggshells with, like with someone who would be kind of a manipulator who's not up front with you. Being up front with each other comes naturally. And I think that's really for me, those three items are the great separators between the quality of this relationship and, dare I say, what went on in either of our respective previous relationships.
And just to be clear, could you repeat those three items?
Optimism, generosity, and that deep connection where we feel like we just get each other.
All right. And for the people that either have a history of settling or are afraid that they might settle again, what are some signs that they can look for that tells them, I might be settling here again?
Well, in addition to writing your deal breaker, and the deal breaker shouldn't just be one sentence. It needs to be a list of things. But second of all, you got to look at people's character. What, you know, if you need to Google character, list of characters, and there's hundreds of them, through there and figure out what's most important to you.
Are you talking cartoon characters? I can think of 100 cartoon characters. Are you talking about, like, you know, virtue? Like what makes virtue?
Yeah.
Okay. Just got your back there. Again, here we go connecting. Say.
So, yes. Anyway, look up those traits. Reason why is when you go on visiting and meeting people, mm-hmm. it's not because you want to grab that person and make them part of your life. You want to see if they even qualify. You know, if you're trying to fill a job position, you're not going to take the first person to walk in the door. You know, they may be, you know, untrustworthy. Well, the first person.
Am I ruining your train of thought?
I'm playing
footsie with my wife right now. Sorry.
Can you just wait like 2 minutes till we're finished the call?
We gotta get a room. Back to my thought. So the first guy who walks in, you know, and you meet him for the first time, he may not be trustworthy, but you won't know if you're trying to get him into your life. You want to get to know him, and this is having to go on several dates. Is he trustworthy with his friends? Is he trustworthy, you know, when he gets the bill, is he cheating the waiter? You know, these little things, these little flags that tell you if this person has a good foundation of a good person. Or are they trying to cheat the system? Are they kind to people? Or are they just being kind to you? Because this is a window to how they're going to treat us.
That's a harbinger of manipulation.
Right. So looking and writing this down, this is the type of person I am. I need someone who is either the opposite or the same as these particular traits. And look for those traits. If they don't fit like a puzzle, that's not your guy. you need to find the next guy. There's lots of, how many people on this earth? 7 billion.
7.5 billion. Man, they keep cranking them out.
There's plenty of people out there that's going to fit that puzzle.
And I think almost all of them are my Facebook friend by now.
And if you find yourself, and you ask the question, how do you know if you're settling? If you're trying to find excuses to why this relationship should work,
Making excuses on behalf of this relationship. You know, you said it earlier, and I don't think you really elaborated quite enough because it's really a profound point. You can choose who you fall in love with. And, you know, if you see these red flags on the second and third date, what's keeping you from kicking this person to the curb and finding someone else, and what's keeping them from kicking you to the curb also, is you don't have enough options. You don't have enough other people to go out with who would be conceivably better. You know, that's what leads to settling. And in my mind is this whole idea that, you know, I'm not good enough. I saw a startling study that most people don't end up being with the person they really desire. They end up being with the person they think they deserve. Our whole tagline, our whole battle cry around here is deserve what you want. And that is a rather radical thought to people, you know, instead of, you know, just give me what I want. Here's how to make other people be your slaves in a relationship, or, you know, just do what do your bidding for you in a relationship. It's more like, you know, I need to be the best person, best version of who I am in order to expect the person I want to want me in return. And I think that all starts with believing in the power of the best version of myself. I mean, Emily's the woman I want. She's precious. I like her. Okay. She's everything I wanted. In order for me to feel comfortable with the fact that I'm going to be able to be the right guy for her, I have to do the best with what I have. I have to be a man of character. I have to be optimistic and generistic.
That's a new word.
We had these early morning things with Osiris. I haven't ever called. So what happens is, you know, I need to be the kind of man she's going to want. I can't just expect to loaf and not have any ambition and, you know, not have any personality and mistreat women and, you know, be this bad guy and expect to trick some wonderful woman into my life. It won't work anyway. So to me, this whole idea of not settling starts with, you know, I refuse to settle. I have the right not to have to settle. You know what I mean?
When I was dating, I had a saying to myself, if I end up with the next relationship and it's not going well and it's not making me happy, why would I be in that relationship and be miserable? I might as well be in my first marriage and be miserable, and then my son will be happy at least.
Ouch.
Very powerful. So if I'm going to be miserable, might as well be miserable with the ex. Children are happy.
The family's together.
Right.
Right. So
that kept me from wanting to settle. Right. That was very powerful for me.
Yeah.
That's really great. Now, I also know that you've put together not one, but two free offers for our audience. You have one for the men and one for the women. Could you speak to those?
Sure. The guys out there who are listening, I welcome you. I want to meet you. I want to talk to you. If there's anything that has struck a chord with you in this conversation, including playing footsie with my wife, I can teach you how to do that.
That you're madly in love with.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And just what you can do is you can go to programs.deservewhatyouwant.com. and get my first book. I usually sell it in my store all day long for $37 with all the audios and everything. I'll give it to you, and it's called Deserve What You Want, and it's kind of the book that put us on the map. Ladies, you can get that too if you want. You can grab the book. You'll land on my newsletter and hear from me, but a lot of women like to lurk on my newsletter for guys anyway because I talk to guys about how to be a great man, and it helps them kind of level set. So you're welcome to do that, and Iris, I think you have the link either in the email for this or at the bottom of the page.
Right below this.
Yeah, because it's sort of a complicated link. Programs.deservewhatyouwant.com. And then for Emily, ladies, she's got a wonderful audio out there that helps you take control of your relationship life, your dating life if you're single. And, you know, you've already figured out she's really cute and sweet. So all of the advice in there is wonderful. It's about an hour-long video audio. And you can put it in your iPod, listen to it, one commute, and you'll be empowered. It's really cool. And to go there, you go to keystobliss.com/free-gifts. Now, on both of those pages, you know, like I said, we are dating and relationship coaches who actually coach. We actually do work with people. We don't just call ourselves that and hide in a tower somewhere. So what we want to offer you is a chance to talk to us and see what we're like. We see what you're like. If it's a good fit, maybe we can do some coaching together. And both of those pages I just mentioned have a button in the top right that will let you sign up for a 25-minute discovery call with us. You know, Iris, you know us, we know you. What you see is what you get. We're real people. We're down to earth. We're real with people. We don't play games. We'll tell you if it's a good fit. We'll tell you if we can help you. We can tell you if you need some other kind of professional other than us. We're very, very upfront. And we're exactly who you think we're going to be when you talk to us.
All right. So, and just with you. Yeah, remember that right below this video are both of those links. Make sure you click on them and pick up the free gifts. And I have one last question. If there was one thing you would hope our viewers take away from our call today, what would that be?
Love does exist. There is somebody out there, actually, there's a lot of many people out there who will be perfect for you. And you, first thing, believe it, it will happen, go for it. Don't stop yourself.
And mine is, it doesn't have to be work. This whole deal where, oh, relationships are hard work. They're harder work if you're, the more you're in the wrong relationship with the wrong person. I mean, you know, obviously we have to do things, we have to solve puzzles here and there, but it never feels like work to be married to my honey. And we just adore each other's company.
And next month is 10 years.
10 years.
Yay, congratulations.
Two kids, 10 years. Tons of adventure later. Oh, what, can I add one last thing? Mm-hmm. Please understand this. People think you need to go backpacking, have all your adventures, knock all the items off your bucket list before you, you know, get a ball and chain and get tied down and settle down. Settle down is the worst word. We have had more adventures, gone on more amazing, to more amazing places, met more amazing people, crossed more items off our collective bucket list since we've met each other, and especially since we've had two more children together. There's now four total in this family than we ever did when we were single. And I lived an adventurous life, as did you, before we were married too. So don't believe for a second that once you're married, you're buried. We have a blast together, and it's because we're together that we do.
I love that. That's such a great message. And with that, I want to say thank you so much for the time that you've given us, for all this knowledge that you've put together, for the free gifts, and for the difference that you make in the world.
Well, thank you for hosting us, Iris. This is a wonderful summit.
We've enjoyed it. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.